So I had some liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Oh, nice. How was that?
Actually, it was pretty good.
Awesome, man. Looks like that Lecter diet is really paying off. A little weird, but seems to be doing well for you.
Yeah. All right, what are we watching today?
Today, we're going a little bit more on the serious side. We're going to talk about Beautiful Boy.
Ah, good one. Grab your popcorn.
All right.
Welcome to Grab Your Popcorn. I am your host, Brian Kroc. Along with me is, of course, my friend, David Kalisa.
Hello.
I don't know why. It's like I could just introduce you as my co-host. I like that. It's like, but I was like, no, I'm going to go for my friend.
Well, I was your friend first before I was your co-host.
That is very true. I actually came across a nice picture back in the day of us, and I was just like, yeah. Those were the fun times when you were a crazy child.
Now I'm just a crazy man.
The first we're completely side note before we actually get into the movie. I'm going to tell you this. The first memory that I actually have of you is you telling the story about going to a movie theater and like basically throwing your popcorn on the ground, if I remember correctly, and just going, no, no, no. That's what I remember. That's my earliest memory. Also, there is still a video of you running full speed into the doors at our local theater in Edwardsville.
I remember doing that. That was when we did the double feature for Grindhouse.
We still have this this video somewhere. If I find it, maybe I'll share it to the page.
That'd be great.
So either way, we're getting into Beautiful Boy. I know we're being rather funny right now, but there's Beautiful Boy is a movie that came out just recently. It is on Amazon Prime is actually where it was finally released on.
Yep. It was a Prime exclusive video.
Yes, Prime exclusive video, which means that, and Prime is really all about getting those movies made or getting those TV shows made. They care about really getting awards. Like that's their goal, is to make media that will get awards.
I mean, I would think that a lot of people that are in the movie industry want to do that in some way, shape, or form.
Yes. Well,
it's a good recognition.
Well, I'm just saying it's a little bit less about making money and more about...
Fair enough.
...getting recognition.
I mean, they have a lot of money already, so maybe that's why they're so focused
very,
on it.
Very much true. But this is a very serious film.
It is extremely serious.
Very much a drama. And it is not for the faint of heart if you are even remotely sensitive to anything that is dramatic, because this isn't like some super sappy kind of story where it's, you know, like you can take a more recent film like a Star Is Born.
Right.
A Star Is Born is Oscar bait to me. Like I look at that and I saw all of the plot points. They're like, okay, here's the setup. Here's this setup. Here's this setup. Yep. There's the delivery. Like I got it, you know, A+. You did a very good job with the music. I was like, but you know, for me, the drama's already been done before.
Exactly. So, I mean, it is a remake. So
yeah, it is a remake of a remake of a remake.
So the originality is not there for that one. But no. As for this one, I will go on a personal note and say that the originality isn't quite there for this one either. I mean, as for topic-wise and a little bit of the delivery, it is something that you have seen before, but it is still kind of a jaunting experience to watch.
Yes.
It was extremely well done, though, overall. And, you know, it's going to hit home for a lot of people because, I mean, especially nowadays, there's very few individuals that you will run across where, you know, somebody doesn't know somebody in the situation.
Yeah.
Or that you know somebody personally that's been in the situation.
So for those of you who don't know, the movie really focuses on the opioid epidemic that is going on, you know, pretty much around the world, but really heavily here in America, where drugs are cheap, comparatively speaking, and can really, really mess with people.
I mean, they really do, and it's the thing of... You know, they're so easily accessible.
Yes.
They are, you know, with today's technology and, you know, easily gainable knowledge, they are also way more powerful than they ever have been. And it is a perfect storm for just a horrible situation, unfortunately.
So let's kind of just do an overview of the general plot. It's the main story focuses around a father and a son.
Correct.
And that is David Sheff and Nicholas Sheff. They are the father being David, the son being Nicholas. It kind of follows his Nicholas's descent into drug addiction and bad drug addiction.
Yeah.
This is some kid in his basement who's just smoking pot, which they actually they talk about that in the movie in one of the flashback scenes where it's like, you know, it's like, hey, Dad, I smoke pot every once in a while, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it quickly deteriorates from there where he starts getting harder and harder drugs until eventually he gets to meth. And he describes meth in the movie as being like the greatest high the greatest thing that he'd ever experienced in his life.
Yeah, he said it's 1,000 times better or like bigger high than cocaine.
Yeah.
And that's just ridiculously horrible to think about, when you break it down, especially as somebody who doesn't do that. And cocaine's already really bad, and you say it's 1,000 times more.
Well, to quote somebody that I know who actually went through this, not the meth part, but definitely some of the other drugs, he said, cocaine makes you feel like you can do anything for about 5 minutes.
Wow. That's a shame. Red Bull at least gives you 10.
So Nicholas starts going down this path. Marijuana and alcohol leads to other drugs, cocaine, ecstasy, and then finally lands on crystal meth. And this gets discovered by David after some serious interactions happen. And Nicholas is basically stating a lot of the other things. It says like, you know, I'm sorry. It's like, I didn't mean for this to happen. And just basically tries to get help in some way.
Right. Yeah.
And this leads to one of several rehab stays.
Yeah. I mean, the kind of unveiling of this process is, pretty stereotypical as for, how everything unfolds. And you hear about this a lot. You know, very few people get it right on the first try, especially with how the dialogue is. I, remember a few acquaintances and people I've met throughout my life. They definitely use a lot of the same dialogue, especially with how he is repetitive in what he says and how he apologizes to his father. So they definitely filmmakers did their research for, behavioral aspects.
Yes. And there's also a little bit of manipulation in there.
Yes.
And stuff too, although it's not extremely overt in the beginning. But the kind of plot that this really follows is that once he gets discovered by his dad and his dad discovers his diary and stuff like that, he starts to realize that this isn't just a
phase.
This isn't just a phase.
Yeah.
Like his Nicholas is really addicted to these drugs and he's really gone down a dark path. But at the same time, Nicholas is I want to be a writer, and basically the best writers out there are the ones that are high. And so he kind of tries to justify it a little bit, but he goes really far over the deep end after a very short period of time.
Yep. And so that pretty much sums up though the gist of the movie though, as for main plot points and
him getting something bad happening, him going to rehab, then how he relapses, and then the cycle just keeps going until it gets really, really bad, and then kind of culminates in a life or death decision between David and Nicholas.
Yeah, and boy, was that a powerful scene.
The one that you're talking about at the very end where they're talking on the phone.
Yeah. I mean, by the end of this, I hope anybody listening to this, chooses to watch this, even if it is hard, because this one scene can honestly, make the entire experience worth it, because Steve Carell has really come into his own over these years as an actor with a wide range of things. But seeing him, really how he emotionally reacted to the scene and the things that he had to say and go through, was nothing short of powerful in my opinion.
Yes, and I gotta say the other thing I kind of took away from this was that you know, I watched Breaking Bad, obviously.
Right.
And the main point of that is that he's making crystal meth and selling it, you know, and it's never really talked about as far as the actual addiction side of it goes. And so this movie kind of put it into perspective exactly how bad that was.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Breaking Bad, that's all of, from the dealer side and the, like, what all of those people go through on a daily basis.
Yep.
This is from the consumer point of view. Yep. and everybody that is affected by that consumer who is addicted to the substance.
Yes. So, I mean, we really can't get into a lot of plot points here because there are plot points, but they all are sort of like the same thing over and over again. It's yep. like I said, something happens, he goes to rehab, he relapses.
Which is true in the sense because, you know, like we
and
said.
And that's what happens in real life
exactly.
a lot of times.
It is a cycle. And, you know, it's one that is either broken, which unfortunately is the lesser of the case.
Yeah.
Or it's one that just repeats itself until it ends naturally.
Yes.
Due to death.
So here's the thing that kind of surprised me about this movie is that, one, I didn't know that this was based on a true story to begin with.
Okay.
No, when I started watching it, I was like, man, this is like very specific. And I was just like, and that's when I realized that it was actually a biographical drama. And it's based off of two different stories, really. There is the story that was written by David, who is he worked for the New York Times as freelance doing stuff. And he actually wrote, I'm not kidding, I looked up David Sheff and like what he'd written before.
Uh-huh.
He actually wrote a thing about Nintendo and how kids are addicted to Nintendo and like video games and stuff like that.
We're not addicted.
Which is actually really funny because when I found that out, like 5-10 minutes later, there's a scene in the movie
with
where
the Nintendo.
Steve Carell grabs yeah. a Nintendo. And that's because he wrote that like a book on it, on addiction to video games back when Nintendo came out.
It was product research. He was trying to understand where the addiction came from.
Exactly. So New York Times writer David Sheff goes through this entire process with his son and writes an article about it called Beautiful Boy, A Father's Journey Through His Son's Addiction. Later on, the son, who was also a writer, Nicholas, writes the book Tweak, Growing Up on Methamphetamines by Nick Sheff. And so that's where like the story of these two things come together. Now, here's kind of the crazy thing is that Beautiful Boy, the original article, was written while Nick was he'd been sober for a good while.
Okay.
And he said, like, it hurt him to his core. Like, he read it, and he never realized the pain that he was inflicting on his dad. And so he's like, it completely changed my perspective on what I did. And then next line follows it up with, but I still relapsed. And relapsed, he's like, but I still relapsed even after reading that. He goes, that's what addiction does to you. And, but then he followed that up by stating that, he's like, yeah, I relapsed, but I didn't relapse as bad as I did the time before. He goes, and it's kind of that thing where, yes, the addiction still is there. He's like, but the desire to fall into it is lessened. And so, like, but now he's been sober apparently for a good while since the last thing that they wrote or whatever.
The articles and,
so,
and everything.
Yeah, and so I've been seeing some stuff about it since this movie came out that they were interviewing him and all of that. So,
I mean, that definitely makes the movie, though, way more interesting, though.
Yes.
Because, I mean, you know, we're all used to, you know, Hollywood fan fiction and everything like that. And, you know, you're supposed to kind of go to a movie to escape from reality. But this movie very much puts you into reality. And that is the reality of what a lot of people are going through. And it is extremely powerful.
Yes. So Nicholas Sheff, however, like I know that David has gone on to do some stuff. Like he's written other things, but it's mainly been like surrounding that deal. Nicholas Sheff, however, has gone off to write for TV and movies.
Okay.
Most notably, though, He is the writer for another drama series on Netflix that is very hard hitting and is very, very serious, and that is 13 Reasons Why.
Ah, that was
dealing with teen suicide.
Right.
And
well, and there's also, I mean, especially in the second season, they picked up a little bit more into like substance abuse and, yes, and other areas that a lot, you know.
Yeah.
It got a little bit more in depth than just suicide, which is still the main focus, though.
Yes. And actually, I thought that so far, that's actually one of my favorite shows on Netflix. Like, whenever the next season comes out, I'm totally going to watch it with my wife. Not to mention the lead actor in there is in a pretty decent band as well.
Yeah, he's not too bad. I've heard a few of his songs and everything like that.
So back to this, though. So Nick has gone on to become a writer for different TV shows and different movies and stuff. So he's actually been doing fairly well for himself. I believe he is married. And might actually have some kids now, too.
Well, there you go.
So, I mean, I know.
Not all of them end in tragedy, luckily.
No, and that's kind of the great thing about this story is that, like, if you didn't know, like, that it was a biography or whatever, or if you thought it was just, like, from the father's perspective, like, you flat out think that Nick's going to die.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, that's how, like, close to the edge he actually gets to just dying.
I mean, not to give away too much, but I mean, one of the quotes from, you know, the hospital is it was a miracle that he didn't die.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was heavily portrayed that, you know, that was his intention.
Yeah.
And so it was extremely disturbing to watch. Not going to lie. You know, I have a few acquaintances and friends that have, that are no longer with us due to that. So
yeah,
it was a little bit powerful for me.
I mean, yeah, I know one family that their son, I mean, I interacted with the kid on numerous occasions, you know, talked to him and stuff. And all of a sudden, I remember like one time after church, word just kind of spread. It's like that he had died and it was because of a drug overdose. And it was just like, oh, God. Like, I mean, he was like 18.
So it's horrible.
A very serious, very serious topic here, and that's why I'm glad that this movie actually got made, because it really showcases the reality of what drug addiction does to a person. It shows the reality of what drug addiction does to the family, and it shows that sometimes the best thing that you can do when you love somebody that is destroying themselves is to not necessarily try and protect them.
Yep. And the other thing that to add on to that I really liked and, you know, noted was the fact that this can happen to anybody.
Yeah,
it does not matter your situation, your environment, your upbringing.
David Sheff is a well-off writer and, I mean, like, lived in an amazing home. I mean,
there was very few things on the list of things, you know, that would have allowed Nick to, or that you would think that Nick would choose to do this.
Yeah,
or, you know, go down that path.
Yeah.
So I think that was pretty important to know, because, you know, a lot of people, you know, a lot of, you know, media outlets also, you know, relate drugs to just poor, impoverished, you know, parts of the country. But that is not always the case.
Yeah. All right. So let's get to the cast.
Go for it.
So we already know Nicholas and David Sheff were working as writers for the movie. It was directed by Felix von Groningen. I have no idea how to say that. That is a German name that is out of my pronunciation.
It's okay. It's very easy to find. And then when you watch the movie, you will understand why we cannot pronounce it.
Yes, yes.
Us Americans in our horrible accents.
Yeah. So let's just start with the top. Let's go with Steve Carell first.
No introduction needed. This man right here is, he is definitely building up his legacy, to say the least.
Yes.
I mean,
comedy, drama, like,
or, you know,
he hasn't really done action, because
closest to action I'd say would be Get Smart, which was an action comedy.
Yeah, action comedy. But he's definitely, he's established himself.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody knows who he is. He's pretty much a bankable actor, like, for anything that he could possibly do. Because even the movies that aren't exactly great are still entertaining.
Yeah. And he's also made himself a big name, obviously, in the family sense with his animated character, Gru.
Yep.
Who is definitely etched into animation history.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that those characters or those movies are going to be forgotten anytime in the near future.
But, of course, made famous because of The Office.
My wife and I are currently going through that for the first time right now.
Also, if you want to know a weird trivia, he was actually the runner-up for a part in the show Titus, which is one of my all-time favorite comedy shows ever written.
My friend Chris really enjoyed that show.
So, yes. All right, let's get on to Nick Sheff,
yes.
Played by Timothy Chalamet. I'm assuming that is correct and not Chalamet. We are in St. Louis. We mispronounce every French thing wrong. So I'm assuming it's Chalamet. I'm not joking. If anybody's not from St. Louis and you're listening to this, you know, like, there's a bunch of French names all over the city. But even then, I mean, look at the fact that we call our city St. Louis, and that should tell you something.
And not St. Louis.
Yeah, St. Louis. So Timothy, let me bring up his information here. Let's see. Born in 1995, he is just a youngin'. But he's been acting in since what, like 2014, really?
And yeah, because he was only in a few short things, and he was few TV episodes. But as for movie wise, he came out in 2014.
Yes. But he's been in a couple of different movies, mainly he was in Interstellar, which is kind of a big deal.
That's a pretty big deal.
He was on Lady Bird, which was apparently a great movie that I have yet to see.
I see the cover for the movie everywhere on different, you know, social media sites or different streaming sites, but I can never bring myself to watch it.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the boat I'm in, and I'm a big fan of Saoirse Ronan, too. So,
Gesundheit?
Yeah, no. The worst part. So my niece's name is Saoirse.
Oh, that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, it sounds so, her, so different in my head.
Her name is actually Saoirse, not Saoirse. So okay. it's just a slight difference in pronunciation. Still spelled the exact same crazy way, but
Saoirse. Okay.
Saoirse.
Now I know.
Saoirse is how you pronounce Saoirse Ronan. Saoirse is how you pronounce my niece's name.
Duly noted.
Boom. Just for you to know.
So yeah, this is what I would consider his a pretty big role for him. Obviously, so, you know?
Yes, he did a bunch of spots on let's see, Homeland. He did some other TV shows, Royal Pains, and then got doing some movies and whatnot with Lady Bird and Interstellar, and now Beautiful Boy. And now that Beautiful Boy is hit, let's see, he's got another movie coming out, A Rainy Day in New York. He's in the new movie Little Women. He's in The King, The French Dispatch. Apparently, he has been cast as Paul Atreides in the new Dune movie.
Ooh.
Which will be very interesting. And actually, after seeing him in Beautiful Boy, I think he could pull that one off. I think he could pull it off really well.
Well, we will find out. We'll find out. Hopefully, that he doesn't get recasted for some crazy reason.
Yeah, I hope not. Because I would really like to see what he would actually do. And it would be very interesting to see if he can truly lead a film like that. Because that's an epic. That's not just that's not just some sci-fi thing that, you know, you can throw practically any. I mean, Dune has been attempted and failed
multiple times.
and so a lot of people are just like, I don't think it can be done. I think it can be done now. I think we have the technology to make a good Dune movie.
It also takes a really good writer, though, too.
Yes, because it takes a lot to condense Frank Herbert down to an actual usable film script.
There's a lot of dialogue, so that'll be real interesting. I'm real excited to see what he's going to be pulling.
You're talking
out
about a book universe that has a history of like 70,000 years. I'm not joking.
I didn't say you were.
It's just,
it's massive.
Mainly telling the people out there who may not know this.
Ridiculous.
They're like, I remember Dune. That's that one movie with what's his name back from the 70s, 80s, actually.
Or the 90s, depending on which one you're watching.
I did like the sci-fi version, actually. I did like it quite a bit. All right, let's get on to Mara Tierney. I'm assuming that's how you say her name. I don't remember.
And so she is the stepmother to Nick. She is David's new wife. They have two kids together in the movie.
Yeah, and the thing that I liked about it, they didn't really express this in the movie too much, but in the books and articles, they actually say that she was very much like a driving force to helping Nick get better. I mean, she said she loved Nick unconditionally and was always trying to do well for him. So,
I mean, I thought you know, for the little that she was in the film, I think she portrayed it pretty well. You could definitely tell. I really enjoyed her scene, the little car chase or whatever that. I thought that had a lot of good power behind it, watching kind of her breakdown of it. You know, that was kind of her you know, you can, it's like physically of the giving up part of it, realizing that, you know, she is not going to be able to catch him both physically there or in a mental capacity with, you know, with what just happened. Yeah. So
Mara Tierney, kind of got like her movie break in like 95 or so or 96, when she was in Primal Fear.
Ah, Richard Gere, yes. And Edward Norton. Yep. Excellent film.
Very, very good movie. I mean, honestly, one of the best actor portrayals I think that I ever saw. And it was one of the ones that cemented Ed Norton in my mind as a brilliant actor. Tough dude to work with, but a brilliant actor.
Extremely tough dude to work with.
Then she was in Liar Liar as the mother slash ex-wife, right?
Oh, they were still pretty together, you know, for the most part.
But yeah, but they had what's-his-name?
He was kind of the driving wedge in the film. We'll have to review this and we'll get into that when we rewatch.
Liar,
it.
Liar
but anyway,
is actually a really good comedy. So,
but then
she did one of my favorite TV shows.
ER.
No. News freaking radio, man. Come on.
I knew that'd get you.
For those of you who may not know, I have worked in radio for the last few years. And it's almost mandatory that when you work in radio, you have to watch
ER,
WKRP, and news radio. It's pretty much standard protocol. Hey, WKRP got a lot of radio stuff right. Most people don't even realize that. A lot of stuff was actually like very, very right on that one.
I believe you.
So, yeah, she was on News Radio, which was the show that I absolutely loved. But then she's gone on to do other things. She was in Semi-Pro, and then she, you know, of course, did ER and Rescue Me. Let's see, The Whole Truth, The Good Wife, and now The Affair.
Yeah, I believe that's like an HBO or Showtime series. Yeah. Showtime, yeah.
Yeah, and so she's been steadily acting. She is a solid actress that you can pretty much throw into any kind of role, and she will do a good job at it. Let's see. Yeah, we don't really need to go over the kids. That's fine. Caitlin Dever, or Dever, I'm not entirely sure. She has a small role in Beautiful Boy as the character Lauren, whom Nick meets after being sober for a while and basically is like, hey, want to party? And then they party.
Yeah.
So, but the thing that I actually know her from is from the TV show Last Man Standing, which is she actually plays the character Eve, and she's really good in that character. She's like a very like tough as nails kind
of
kid.
The whole cast of that show is fantastic.
Yeah, it's a good show.
They really nailed it. I'm really glad they got it back on air.
But she's been acting since like, let's see, 2009, doing a couple of different one-offs on TV series, and then finally getting on the show Justified. And then eventually getting onto the show Last Man Standing. She is currently in pre-production for a couple of different things. A movie called Them That Follow, Booksmart, and a TV series Unbelievable, which is supposed to, all three of those are supposed to come out this year.
Cool.
So there you go.
So then I believe next in line that would be big would be David's ex-wife in the film.
Vicky.
Yeah, Vicky, played by Amy Ryan.
Yes.
She is a big actress. She has definitely done quite a few big things.
And the thing is that you may not actually recognize her when you see her in the movie. It's not that she looks like different or anything. It's just that a lot of the shots really aren't of her face. It's like farther off.
Yeah,
and like
it's like her
an
figure.
Because
it's about her. It's about her posture and her body language.
And really,
know, dealing with, you know, the you know, film and everything like
that. Well, the thing that I think is kind of interesting is that really her entire part is meant to be heard, because that's how it was experienced with David, because everything that they did was through the phone, really.
Right.
And so it's like him recalling conversations and then writing those down and stuff like that. And so that's why I think that the director made a really good decision and not just like throwing her into the middle of the plot, you know, like surrounded by everybody else. It's a lot of phone conversations, so... but yeah, she's been going strong. Let's see. Let's go all the way down to the bottom. 1956, apparently. No, I don't know how that. Apparently, she was on something in 1956, but then didn't do anything until 1991.
As the World Turns is one of the soap operas that's
been
on.
Yeah, so she might have played
then.
A baby.
Yeah, she was on in 1990, so she was either probably preteen or, you know, one of the like a kid or something like that. So yeah, then she, you know, goes on to later do a lot of, you know, TV shows, little one episodes here and there, and then looks like Capote with Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Capote.
Yeah, Capote. It's all the same. St. Louis.
But the reason why some of you might recognize her though is because
HR rep Holly from The Office.
Yes. And love interest of Michael.
Yes.
So
who is just as quirky as he is.
Yes.
That's scary to think about.
She really played that well. So it was really nice to see these two actors like come together, even though they weren't actually on screen together. So
they were for the very end.
Oh yeah, for the very end.
They had
yes.
one scene together.
But it was still really nice just because it's like, you know, it's sort of an interesting connection between them. So. But she's been doing movies like ever since.
Oh yeah. Let's see. Escape Plan with Sylvester and Arnold. Devil's Knot. That was pretty good.
Central Intelligence. Let's see. Goosebumps.
Bridge of Spies. The Infiltrator. So she's been working with some big people lately.
Yeah.
And she got a few upcoming projects: Strange But True, Lost Girls, and Late Night. All three of those coming out this year at some point.
Yeah.
So if you're a fan of her, keep a lookout for those.
And I would say that the only other like real like person to kind of show up here would be
probably the doctor that he meets with in the very beginning of the movie,
Dr. Brown.
Yep.
Who is actually played by Timothy Hutton. Just weirdly enough, it was just like,
popped in there. I guess he had a free day to shoot.
I guess it was a very small part, you know, but it was definitely very interesting because he's the one that explains what drugs actually do to the brain.
Yeah, and specifically the ones that David finds out his yes. son is on and everything. That's kind of
this leads to a very interesting thing that David does in the movie that apparently actually happened. He goes and gets some drugs
and does them
at home. To see, like, you know, I want to experience what my son is going through
yep.
kind of deal. It's very strange, but it was just like, okay, I can see that if you love somebody that much and if you're a writer and you're used to, like, trying to throw yourself into a situation, I can see how somebody could actually do that.
But
I personally wouldn't do it, but
no,
I can see how somebody else could.
No, I don't think I would either. So he's been in quite a bit. His big thing right now that I guarantee a lot of you recognize him from is the Netflix show The Haunting of Hill House.
Yep.
He exploded and gained popularity very quickly. He was also on another Prime TV show, the Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan, along with another Office co-star, John Krasinski. And from the few episodes I watched of that was extremely good too. So
yeah.
Going down a little bit earlier, though, he's definitely had his... had his fair share of roles in movies, though. Appeared alongside Johnny Depp in Secret Window. He was also in The General's Daughter with John Travolta. Excellent, excellent movie.
Yeah.
And a whole bunch of other things. So if you want to see some of his earlier work, there's plenty to go around.
That is true. But that's basically it. That's the core group of the entire movie, and then a couple of outliers, too. But yeah, for the most part, it's a fairly small cast.
Oh, it's a very small cast. I feel probably very small production. You know, there weren't that many other, you know, like that many locations.
Yes.
It's not like they traveled around anywhere or anything
but
like that. So
here's kind of the interesting thing though, because movies don't, especially with Amazon releases, they don't follow the same thing. Cost $25 million to make the movie. Can you guess how much it's officially made?
I'd say probably it's cleared 100 by now.
10.
Really?
Yep.
Oh.
Well talked
Way
about.
Off.
Well thought of, you know, like it's a good movie. Everyone's been talking about it. It's been getting nominated for stuff. $10 million. It's strange, but, you know, is what it is.
You know what?
I guess you can't really calculate that, like, how much it really is for Amazon earning it, though, because they... you know, more people might sign up, you know, for Prime or whatever that happens to be. It's like, there's other outliers that
yeah.
affect that.
And like we stated, they, you know, we were talking about this earlier. Amazon's not in it to make money.
Yes.
They're in it for the awards.
Yes.
And you know
and
what?
They've got that going. So let's see. They got nominated for an award at the Aspen Film Festival and won that. The Chicago International Film Festival won that. Let's see. They got nominated for a Golden Globe, Hollywood Film Awards. Let's see. They've been nominated for Screen Actors Guild, the Toronto International Film Festival.
That's a big one right there.
They got nominated for a bunch of different ones.
Well, I'll tell you what, you don't have to bring home a lot in order to be remembered. That's definitely been proven. I mean, a movie, the prime example for that would be Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah,
that movie did not absolutely horrible, but it did pretty bad in box office.
Yeah,
but by today's standards, and now when that's a cult classic.
Yeah,
that is shown on a multitude of different channels across the board, and is actually still on a lot of streaming. Right now, but it didn't do so well when it came out. So maybe that's a story for this. But it wouldn't surprise me though if it's not, because it's not really one that you're just gonna be like, man, I feel like watching this today.
Yeah,
I feel like being depressed.
Yeah,
but it is so worth the one watch.
It's a very good movie in my opinion. So what would you give this ranking wise?
I think ranking wise, I'm probably gonna give it a solid 6.5 to 7. Just because, originality-wise, like we talked about, that wasn't really there.
Yeah.
They didn't really bring anything new to the table, per se.
Yeah.
As for, kind of what we already didn't know about the drug or the epidemic. But every bit of my score comes definitely from just the storytelling aspect of it and the actor's portrayal of everything. So
I'm in agreement. I'll give it a 7 for the exact same reasons.
Cool.
There you go. I'm short and sweet. This episode obviously is not going as long as some of our other ones have, but...
But it doesn't need to.
The
movie was pretty short and sweet as well, as for, what it wanted to get across and everything like that. So we hope to leave it open to plenty of interpretation for your own parts, and we hope that you feel, at least hopefully in a little bit in the same way that we do about it.
Yep.
Because, it is a good film. And if you don't like it, we kind of also understand why, though.
Yeah. But that's all we got for this week. Please find us on any of our social media stuff that we got going on, mainly on Facebook. Go to the Grab Your Popcorn page and interact with us. We're always willing to talk with anybody.
Absolutely.
About any random thing. That's basically all I got, though. I mean, as far as this episode goes.
It's okay, though. I think we'll make up for it next week. I think we're going to be a little bit more detailed and involved with it.
You're going to be blown away with our choice next week. Because we haven't made it yet.
Ah, the mystery of it all, the suspense. It's going to kill you.
Either way, folks, I have been your host, Brian Kroc. And along with me, of course, has been David Calisa.
Thank you all for listening. Have a good one.
Grab your popcorn.